VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Ruck. It's Stephen Jones from The Sunday Times here, speaking to you from our palatial studios in southeast London. Thank you for downloading us. Thank you for listening to us throughout the season. We'll be going straight through to the end of the season without a break. We've got rid of all the riffraff today. Slotty's been axed. Stuart Barnes is locked in his ivory tower. The dog man's in his kennel. Even Sarah Mockford is not wanted because we've replaced three seats in the studio with three thrones. We've got three of the biggest names in women's rugby and with over, I think, 200 caps between them. Catherine Spencer, welcome, Kath.
Thank you.
Won 63 caps for England, captained England in the 2010 Rugby World Cup. Now on retirement, runs her own company called Inspiring Women. And she was one of the most inspirational players that there's been. She's also broadcaster, coach of Old Eltamians, who are fighting for promotion, Kath?
That's true. Well, we won our league and we just missed out on a playoff game, but a successful season.
Whose fault was that? Was that the players or the coach?
As director of women's rugby, actually, to have my proper name, posh name, I have to take all responsibility.
Well done. Okay. But you're going to keep your job?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Excellent. Catherine's also writing a book, and long overdue as well. You showed me one or two extracts, but the main part of it is to be crowdfunding, is that correct?
That's right, yeah. I'm using a... thank you, Steve. I'll pay you later for this little plug.
Okay.
I'm using a crowdfunding publisher called Unbound and allows budding, aspiring authors like myself to get books published and have been fantastically supportive. So I'm on 71% funded. Got a little bit of money still to fund and people, I'm sure, can read out the link later. But the book is called Mud, Maul, Mascara, to give you a little hint of what it's about.
Okay. Well, I can recommend it. I'm not saying that because you're sitting opposite me. I can recommend it because the bits I've seen have been absolutely superb. Giselle, is your surname got a long A or a short A?
Mather.
Okay, Giselle Mather, I've only known her for about 20 years, but I just found that out, had 34 caps for England as a back, and in a time when they won the Rugby World Cup in 1994, I think probably you didn't see much ball because weren't they not a real forward-based team?
It was an interesting final to beat Americans who had outstanding backs. We needed to show the technical differences in the front row.
You beat what you mean?
Yes.
What you mean is you beat them up.
Something like that.
I remember that. Yeah.
It's proper rugby.
Since then, Giselle's coaching career has been stellar. You coached England under 20. You were the backs coach for the full England team. And I've got a great long list of tributes here. You coached Teddington Antlers. They were the National Junior Vars and Senior Vars champions. This is the men's team, 2010-2011 at Twickenham. Three successive promotions and were once unbeaten for 63 games. Do you think actually you somehow missed your calling? Because you should be the head of world rugby and the coach of the England men's team at the moment. And now coach of Wasps ladies. We were knocked out narrowly after a great two-leg playoff in the semi-final of the Tyrrells Premier 15s. Did you have time off amongst all that for the kids, or did you just neglect them?
No, they were kind of brought up along the side of a pitch.
Okay.
I remember Jasper, my eldest, was running the line for Teddington. He used to do that. Just youngsters around. I remember in one final we had when I was coaching Teddington, somebody came up to me and said, are you happy that your daughter's there? And I turned around and she's a gymnast, and at the time she was 7 years old. She was at the top of the rugby posts having climbed up there, and it was my husband's responsibility to look after the kids at that moment in time.
Okay.
And so straight away was like across there and, yeah, that's fantastic, I think it's time you come down. So down she comes, and then I'm looking at my husband going, for goodness sake, That's your job today.
When you coach at London Irish, it was their academy.
Yes.
You very much went for a holistic thing. You always saw it as more as these young lads are coming through that were good at rugby but maybe not good at life skills and all that, and you always thought it was your job to be holistic with them?
Absolutely. I'm a massive believer in better people make better players, and under pressure situations, and you know, just if you look at the Tyrrell Premier 15 final, there were so many moments of pressure in there. Now, if you have people who can't do things for themselves, who can't think about, you know, how to solve different problems in their own lives, so to speak, how do they do it on a rugby field in under that kind of pressure?
Sure.
And it's about, you know, my whole coaching thing is, yes, obviously the technical, the tactical, all of that, but it's also about people and about how you prepare them for those particular moments and how to cope with adversity, how to cope with triumph without it overseeing. You know, and losing perspective, and I think that's it takes a long time. It's a developmental thing, and every opportunity there is learning situations in for young athletes. So that's very much what I was about at Irish.
Our final guest, and she's in the chief throne. when you win one cap for your country, it must be absolutely fantastic. When you win 20 or 30, when you get your 50th, it must be just miraculous. When you get your 100th, well, that's absolutely ridiculous. When you've got 137. It must be tiring for a start. Rochelle Clark, you are the most capped England rugby player of all time, as we well know. How many of those 137, if I threw out some random questions, would you be able to remember?
Oh, I'll give it a good go. If not, I'll remember it how I think I remember it. Certainly, I'd say, you know, probably remember 100 of them, I guess. But a few blend in, you know. But I can probably remember most, I say.
In common with the other two, you've been an excellent coach. Chesham Stags, the men's team that you coached for, how many years? Four or five?
Seven years.
Yeah. Finished third in the table.
Yeah, they've had a fantastic season. I also coached the ladies' team as well, and they've done really well, finishing their highest finish, fifth. So it's been a great season all round, and it's, you know, something I'm really, really passionate about and hope to pass on the skills that I've learned and give them the best learning environments they can be the best they can be.
When I saw you at the Women's World Cup in Dublin and things didn't go as well as you thought in the final, I said, whatever you do, don't retire. You look at me like I was a piece of dirt because you had no intention of it. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I've always said it'll be the coaches that have to put me out to graze rather than me choosing. You know, passion's still there. Unfortunately, I'm getting older, but certainly my move to Wasps this year has reinvented me as a player, and I've loved every minute. And
do you mean you needed better coaching?
Different type of coaching. Giselle's ways are very different, and certainly get the best out of me. So I'm really grateful to Giselle and all the Wasps girls. They've helped me develop this season.
We're all obsessed in the media, Rocky, with milestones, etc. You're on 137. Do you know that? I mean, obviously, you know that there are only three people above you in the history of the game. Is that some sort of target for you? I mean, I will name them: Richie McCaw, Brian O'Driscoll, and George Gregan. You're up there with those three, and deservedly so.
It's not a bad few names to be associated with. One of the most proudest things I'm proud of with my caps is being the most capped front row player. So if I finish on 137, that's a great thing to finish on. But if I get any more, you know, it'd be wonderful. I love playing for my country, and you know, I'll hold on by my fingernails if I could to play one more time. So we'll just see what they have in store.
Okay, and Kath, did you always find Rocky inspirational, or was she, when you were captain, was she a pain in the backside for what?
I'm sat mate. Next to her. If I could swap place with Giselle, I'll tell you what I really think. But no, absolutely. Rocky was, I kind of looked above her when I first got into the elite squad, because Rocky had been in there, I think, about a year before me. I'd come up from the academy.
You.
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And she was brilliant. She was really welcoming. I was terrified. I was just this girl from Folkestone. I shouldn't be there. No one knew me and all this kind of stuff. And I think Rocky used to come with a green giant because I had my bright green Folkestone kit on.
green giant.
But really welcoming into the squad. And actually moving on a few years, because we haven't got ages, when I was captain, she was always someone I quite often was a go-to player for me, and I quite often talk about, you know, when you're a leader you need to use the strengths of others, and Rocky was one of those people for me. And I remember there was quite often at half time in England games, I'd be like, Rocky, can you be my person that does the talk, because I wasn't necessarily the right person for the time. And Rocky was the person that would lift everyone up if we needed it. And, you know, there's some players that have got, like, auras around them.
Sure.
And Rocky's one of those players, absolutely, yeah.
Giselle, what did it mean when Rocky came into the dressing room door for the first time this year?
She obviously inspires straight away, but it was her... She's very measured about how she is about things, and then when she spots something that is, she speaks it and everyone just takes it on board straight away. But it's not like a constant. It's, she looks at it, she sees it, and then she's unbelievably measured, and the moment she says something, everyone's taken it on board and moves forward. And out on the field, she knows exactly what's next, exactly what's needed, and that leads and leads our pack. And our pack have grown in stature massively throughout this season, and that's a large part of that is due to Rocky. So
he's also got good banter, rugby banter, and a sense of humour, which is completely important as well, isn't it? So
I feel like I'm at my own funeral.
Absolutely, that's enough.
Very nice, thank you.
Right, hey, you're desperately trying to retire. No, no, we're not. Well, we always try to be first with the news on the Sunday Times, and there's some big news this morning in women's rugby. Danielle Waterman, England's fullback, I think, I don't think she embarrassed if I called her iconic fullback, has retired from international rugby this morning. Certainly one of the most astonishing characters I've ever interviewed, one of the most ebullient, one of the people who most willing to give of themselves in an interview. That's just from a journalistic point of view. You've been close to her this season. Did you know she was going to retire, and what sort of effect do you think that'll have on, well, the profile of the game, really, because she's huge?
Yeah, she is. Yes, I did know, because obviously as her current coach, we had long discussions about it. I needed her to think about it properly from all angles.
Yeah.
But she's a young lady, as you well know, who's very clear in her own mind about where she's at. And I think one of the biggest things for her was that she needed to retire on her own terms, which is very much what she's doing. And in rugby, that's sometimes a very difficult thing to do, because injury claims and, you know, all there's umpteen other reasons why, which doesn't always mean that you get that option. She's had a phenomenal season, both for England and us at Wasps. And it's the role that she's taken this year. She's now, you know, there's obviously a coaching knowledge. She used to work down at Gloucester Hartbury and brought through a lot of players that are playing now. But it's how she mentors young players, how her thought process is on field and off field around that. And she's so passionate about the game, but she's also passionate about others achieving. And she's a fabulous ambassador for the things that she does and for our game. Both on and off the field. I mean, when you watch what she does with those feet, it's just... I mean, half the time I don't think she knows where she's going, because it's just ridiculous. And absolutely stunning to watch, and puts... The people that have criticism around the game, when they watch that talent, you can't criticise it. It's just phenomenal. And that gives the game, when athletes like that and performances like she can produce and tries that she scored are there, that elevates the game to place. It's like Portia Woodman, isn't it, in sevens. You have somebody who is of that ilk, you realise that you're looking at elite, you're watching special.
Almost something like, in the impact she has, and, you know, she is a great ambassador, but women's rugby is not short of great ambassadors, but is she almost sort of in the Johnny Wilkinson class as an ambassador?
Yeah, but I'd also look at her as a Jason Robinson as well, because she's small in stature, Nolly. She's not a big player at all, but she's unbelievably strong and powerful. She's rapid, although now she always says, oh, I'm not as quick as I used to be, and she's not. But what she's done is invent herself in that way. Although when you watch that chase down that she did on Fiona Pocock in the semi-final, she wouldn't say she wasn't rapid, but she's aware of what she needs to unlock her game. And I also believe she's aware that she needs to retire from international rugby. We're very fortunate she's going to be still playing for us next year, which is great, but she knows what she's about, and she knows where she's at, and that's another reason that I really admire her, because she knows her own mind.
Rochelle, you must have got 10,000 memories of her, really, but as well as when the first time I saw her play for England at fullback, I thought, what's that little girl doing there? It must be the mascot. But I mean, to be fair to her, she's a real tough player as well. She's not just a brilliant runner. She's a tough player, which would appeal to forwards as well as backs, sort of thing.
Absolutely. And when I first started playing alongside Nolly, she was our scrum half. So she'd scream at you. She'd pack a punch. She was just so strong for this little person, like, you know, you think as a prop you're going to run over the top of her and then you get smashed and you're like, okay, I need to run a bit harder into her next time. Like, she is so, yeah, such an unbelievable rugby player. Giselle said, dancing feet, but so physical. She could play back row as well. She's
one of my favourite memories, and I think Rocky might remember this. We were playing against France, and I can't remember if it was Six Nations or a World Cup game, and there was a ruck at the side of the pitch and quite a few bodies in there from either side, and Nolly Nolster, as I call her, she came charging into this ruck, and all you saw was about four or five French bodies kind of rebound off the other side of this ruck. Yeah. And that's what I loved. You know, you talk about her footwork and everything, and that's what I loved about Nolly. Yeah. She's just so physical when she needed to be, but yeah,
so brave,
loads of energy. Yeah,
do you
really
remember
brave.
The 2010 World Cup, which I always thought was just a massive quantum leap in terms of physicality. Suddenly there was Maggie and Heather Fitcher and all these guys, and I remember that Nolly hit someone, one of the Australians, at the play at Harlequins, and it was, everyone still remembered it, and that registered, and I just thought that was a representative moment of the whole tournament. Was she easy to handle when she was in the team?
Oh, Nolly, yeah, she was brilliant. I mean, she was a bit like Rocky, actually. She's got this, like, ball of energy, but she's also very mature as well. You know, she's sensible. She's got a good rugby brain, and she is a good team person, as Giselle says. She's, you know, she communicates really well with all different types of people, I think. And she was brilliant. She was brilliant, absolutely brilliant in the team, you know, but she worked really hard as well.
Yeah, she's a ball of sunshine, like, so infectious, lights up any room she goes in. Yeah, she's most of the time bouncing off the walls, and then it's hard not to, like, when we're doing prehab and stuff, she's doing some really stupid dancing. You're just wetting yourself at her, and you can't help but join in or just take the mickey. She's a wonderful person.
When the RPA did their lift the weight campaign, and I spoke to her about her trying to get back from injury God, it was just ferocious. I mean, it almost brought the tears to your eyes what she did to get back. So maybe there's another side to her, but what you're all saying is that the side that the general public see is the real her.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But I also think that vulnerability in Nolly is, you know, she bared her soul over that in order that it helps other athletes.
Yeah,
that's what she's about. And there is that vulnerability in her that is part of the word, the infectious word you've described. It's not just the energy, it's the vulnerability as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, anyone listening out there who's ever seen Danielle play, you can still do so for WASP. It'll be the last time for England, but like the other three in this room, in this studio, I've got fantastic memories as well, and she'd be really, really sadly missed. We're also speaking at a newsworthy time because we're still, I was going to say reeling, but in a nice way, from the final of the Tyrrell's crisps. And how much better that we've said all season. They're much better than that rubbish that Gary Lineker advertises. I don't know what they're called, but that big-eared idiot from football. I've always preferred Tyrrell's myself. They sponsored the Premier 15s, which was in its inaugural year. We saw an absolutely, what I thought was an amazing final on Sunday. I think maybe the coaches, well, were a little frustrated. The winning coach wouldn't have been. If I was the Harlequins coach, I think I would have taken a long walk off short pier, because I felt they could easily have won it. But first of all, the final. Coach, you wanted to be there. No doubt you're still slightly embittered that you weren't. But what do you think of it? Can you take a kind of global view of it, or is it all going to be tied up in you wanting to be there?
No, not at all, because, you know, the harsh reality of it is that we've played Quins four times now this season and lost them all. So there you go. There's the answer. So from our point of view, we've got to go away, we've got to work harder, and we've got to be better. But we have made huge progress as a club side from where we were prior to Tyrrell's to where we are now. And that to be in that final was just one step too far and too soon for us. Watch this space. That's all I'll say on that one. But it's in terms of a final, it had everything that the promoters of the game would ever want, wouldn't you? And literally down to the last second, you still didn't know who was going to win the game.
No.
There were certain moments in it, critical moments, as I would call them, one of which obviously being the scrum where, right at the very end, where Harlequins destroyed Saracen scrum, were awarded a penalty. And actually, you could even question that perhaps that one should have been a penalty try there and then, because they were headed for the line. And then Leanne Riley, the scrum half, took a quick tap and whizzed it. Now, my initial reaction to that as a coach is to do what all coaches would have done, put their head in their hands and gone, oh my God. But when you think about it, the try that Harlequin scored via Holly Myers in the corner just before half time was exactly the same. She took a quick tap, whizzed it across, and it wasn't dropped. On this occasion, it was dropped.
Okay.
Now, was that Leanne's fault that it was dropped? Did she see something? Did she feel that that was the moment? And you've also got to remember that Harlequins had been on Sarri's line for 7-8 minutes and not got across. So maybe she believed that it still wasn't going to happen.
So
maybe
what you're saying is, had you been Gary Street, you would have been completely fine with all of that?
At that moment in time, definitely not. And all the coaches that I was sat with, I mean, I was sat with Susie Appleby from Gloucester and Kim Oliver from Bristol. We were, all of us, like, oh, game management all the way through. And that's so easy to say when you sit up in the stands. But when you think that the try that was scored there, I mean, there were 21 penalties Harlequins had. So, you know, that's a question in itself. Sarri's had 10 and 21.
We'll come back to the laws at the moment. Rochelle, first of all, your impressions of the final and also your impressions on what it's done for the women's game, the league itself.
I think having the support of Tyrrells has grown the game hugely, and the final again was a really exciting final for Joe Bloggs watching it. It was a great game of rugby, not women's rugby, a great game of rugby, and that's how we we want to keep promoting the game. It's just a game of rugby, and hopefully a really good one. And yeah, it went down to the wire. Brilliant performances from both teams, and understand the conditions on the day were really difficult. The wind played quite a big factor in the game as well, so it was hard to get out the 22. And I think Sarri's managed the game slightly better. And credit to the Cleals, they were on fire that day. And Marley, with that kind of back row, it's really hard to stop. But equally, Abby Scott, Vicky Cornbrough, Shauna all put a huge shift in. So
I saw that. I thought Abby Scott was monumental, and Shauna Brown, who I've not seen play before, was just completely
immense.
Out of this world. And
immense.
The other thing is, these new kids coming through, sorry, I shouldn't call them kids, it sounds patronising, but you think, God, that girl, she looks about 17. They found she was 17. I mean, that's just absolutely phenomenal. But, Kath, there's been many sort of quantum leaps in the women's game. Is this another one to have a league like that and to be at least professional in your preparation, even if not sort of earning money?
I think a focus on the club game is what was needed, and I wrote about this a couple of years ago, didn't I, Steve, in the Sunday Times. It wasn't appreciated in much at the time, but it's a step that's been needed in the game. Elite level, England level, it's getting there. The game's growing, and apparently at grassroots we've got all these new players playing rugby, but in between that, the Premiership was definitely the level of the game that needed work, and so it needed something to come in. And obviously this has required a bit of a step change. It's required greater support and infrastructure at club level, and a lot of work for the clubs, a huge amount of club work at the clubs, which Giselle will know more about it, and there were lots of changes before this season with Lichfield going out and various different things. But looking at the bigger picture, this is exactly what's needed. And clubs like Harlequins are putting a huge amount of resource and support into the women's game, and that's got to set a base level now, hasn't it? That's exactly where we need to be, and great final year. But I think in terms of spectators, how many people were there? About 2,000 people there. You look at equivalent in women's football, and they had like over 30,000, didn't they, to their cup final. So we're getting there. We've got less participants, but we've still got still got a huge way to go. So it was a step, but it's a step, hopefully, amongst many.
What's the key? I don't want to ask you about private meetings, Giselle, but what's the key to the future? What's the next steps in it?
Well, I think there's a lot of issues around it. So, if I talk about my own squad, they've gone from last year, before Tyrrells, to 2 nights a week training. Now it's 3. Plus, they're expected to do stuff in the days that they're not up at club. They're obviously there at the weekend. The performances are expected of them now because the media is now aware of them and make comment about them. The disciplinary processes are all the same, and the finance involved in that is the same. So there are, you know, the scrutiny, there's citing commissioners, there's all of those things going on. The players are working ridiculously hard and holding down full-time jobs. Now, you know, that in itself is a challenge. And at the moment, with the energy and the freshness of the Tyrrells, that's all been fine. I'm looking at my squad now and they're tired. They are tired. And obviously all rugby clubs by the end of the season are tired. So they'll have their time off. But it can't be too long because the standards are high. So we start again. And yeah, there's still the energy, the enthusiasm. But there's going to have to be a point where players don't have to do full time. I can't see it reaching full time completely for a long time. But I can see part time where maybe a couple of days a week they are rugby players, and then they do their job.
Rochelle, is that inevitable? That you know, I don't know how you manage your time, because I mean, you must do stuff at 3 a.m. in the morning with everything you've got to fit in. But is it inevitable that the game can only go ahead now if there is some form of remuneration?
Yeah, it's taking that step forward, and we're putting on the performances. But to go to the next level, of course, we're going to need that back in, and it has been tough holding down a full-time job and fitting your training around it. But you know, you do it for the love of the sport, and I think that's everyone does that for it. So it's, yeah, hopefully we'll start getting reap the benefits of the seeds that have been sown.
But if we're all talking about performance, to perform, athletes need time to train and they need time to rest in order that's there. Mm-hmm. And our athletes, so having worked at London Irish, they do their training, they do their this, and then they go, the time is theirs. I watch my athletes, they've done their full-time job, they come into us in the evenings and then they train and then they go back. And some of them are driving long distances. Mm-hmm. Where's the rest period? Where's the time for the body to recuperate? And we're talking about raising standards, which the Tyrrells has done because the finance is there to support. We've got strength and conditioners and proper medical staff. But in order to go to the next level, so that these players can, the catch pass, you know, you sometimes look at it and say, oh, that catch pass isn't good enough. The kicking isn't good enough. Well, that takes time. And when is that time? And for me, that's why remuneration is necessary, to buy time more than anything.
Sure.
It's not about lacing players' pockets with massive finance. That's not what it's about, not making them rich through the game.
Yeah,
it's about
great
giving
point.
Them time to kick, to
sure.
spend the time, the hours. Like, we all know how long Johnny Wilkerson trained to kick.
Yeah.
Now, my players don't have that time.
Yeah.
And right across the women's game, it's a weakness in the game, which, you know, we don't kick the ball as well. Some players do. Katie McLean, Daly McLean, there she is, the most extraordinary kicker. But, you know, they're rare at this moment in time. And it's just time that we want to buy.
That's why match fees are not the answer, aren't they, at England level?
Yeah.
Because it's
time.
Exactly that. It's not about money going into bank accounts, which is nice. It's about being able to be
the best you can be.
You're talking about good people, you
Buying
know
time.
And that, yeah, but
okay.
it, you know, it will happen at some point, won't it? It just needs, you know, it needs more sponsorship, it needs more finance in the game, but that's starting to happen, isn't it?
And that will take us to the next level.
Can I ask you one question which you may or may not want to answer? I've seen almost every Women's World Cup final, and I've seen the recent ones up close. Every time you see one, it's refereed by a woman. Every time you see a men's final, it's refereed by a guy, of course. Is that taking development too far? Because if I'm honest, and I have to be as a journalist, I didn't think the refereeing was up to scratch on Saturday. On Sunday, I thought the penalty try, which you mentioned, Giselle, was a stone-cold penalty try. And I thought the referee, under pressure, struggled to cope with it. Now, should... I don't like it when we send a woman to cover women's rugby. I don't see why we should do that. Because I cover the women's game, and I don't see why... It should happen like that. But have they gone a stage too far, Kath, with referees?
Yeah, I think so. I did a rugby rant about this a while ago. Referees, whether they're male or female, should be refereeing the game that's appropriate to their standard. And I think we should, you know, it's good to encourage more referees, more coaches, more volunteers in the game, whether they are male or female. And actually, Joy Neville, I think, is fantastic. Yeah, for those people who don't know, retired from Ireland and now referee the Women's World Cup final. Mm. It's just one World Referee of the Year. Really good referee, great. But I do think there have been referees that have been used in World Cup Six Nations that have been pushed to a level that they're not ready for. And whether we like it or not, as females, I think as players, as referees, we're under a magnifying glass. We are. So as soon as we do anything that's not so good, the attention is raised. We're not doing stuff for ourselves. We're doing stuff for kind of womankind, if that makes sense. But I completely agree. It's gone too far. We need referees who are at appropriate level and given time.
So we don't want to be critical of any individuals here, but there's a principle at stake, surely.
I think there is generally. Just because I'm a female, does it mean I get a job? No. If it's in a different thing, if just because you're male, does it mean you should get the job? No. Mm. For me, it's about being... I totally agree with what Kath just said. When you are in the minority of anything, you have to be better than everybody else to hold the right. So that pressure is on females because we are still, in comparison, infancy of the game. Sure. In comparison to the men. But that doesn't mean that we're any less capable or any more capable because of our gender. And I think you have to look at what we're actually doing and what Kath just said there. If the referee is good enough, they're the referee. The gender is irrelevant. When I coach, and I've been privileged enough to coach males, females, elite, club, amateur, professional, right across the board, I coach the sport, I coach the person that's in front of me, not because they're a male or female. And people say to me, do you do different things for males or females? No, I do what the athlete in front of me that I perceive needs at any given moment. Now, 80% of people may have stereotypical traits and 20% not, but that's not to do with, you know, that does that mean that I just coach 80% of people and 20%? Of course it doesn't. So am I different as if I don't go onto the rugby field and think of myself as female while I'm coaching. I'm sure the referee doesn't go on and see herself as female. And it's what Kath just said, if you are good enough in any field to do the job, does gender have an issue? In my mind, no, it doesn't. I never consider myself to be a female coach. I am a coach. And the fact that I'm female, yes, I might do things sometimes slightly differently. But then is that stereotypical of my gender? Maybe, maybe not. Okay. So, you know, it's not about that. And we have been ref by some females in the Tyrrells Premiership who are not good enough. Mm. And I've been ref by males who are not good enough. Mm. So it's not to do with gender, it's to do with what Kath said, experience.
Rocky, let's just go back to one of those items there. At least in the game, there was scrummaging. There were some really controversial incidents. There were real good scrums. There was a time when I think, well, Saracens go right on top here. The Quins came right back. In the men's game, scrummaging has gone down the pan a little bit because they've got these laws about, you know, you can pick the ball out the second row. The referees now are saying, play the ball, it's at the number 8's feet. Why should you have to do that? You don't have to do the ball, play it. Is scrummaging still sort of sustained itself in the games that you played?
I'd like to think so, as a loose-head prop. I'm playing with Amy Kokane and Justo, and it's certainly made a hell of a difference to Wasps this season, so that's been a huge part of our game plan. So yeah, I'd like to think that scrummaging is still very important and is a huge part for it in the game.
I think in the women's game, the scrum's still used as an attacking platform to, you know, run off it, and so often not in the men's game, it seems to be a platform to win a penalty, doesn't it? And that seems to be the difference.
So, Tim, what's irresistible whenever you speak to a prop, you always want to know who are the real beasts that you played against, who are the real good ones, who maybe, well, you're not going to admit they got on top of you, I'm sure, but who are the real tough props in all those caps?
France used to have some really, really big girls, and they were always really tough to scrummage against. But as always, that's one of the best parts about being a prop is having that one-on-one close battle, and I relish that. And then Sophie Hemming as my teammate for England, but certainly quite a few decent battles up front against each other when she was playing at Bristol. Mm. You know, one of the toughest opponents. And then Canada are just always big there, so it's hard to be able to shift some of their weight around, but you know, you learn new techniques. And
the 2014, they were huge, the Canadian props, weren't they?
Yeah, massive. And so we struggled a little bit in our last pool game, me and Hemo, and then there's a really poignant picture of me and Hemo head to head in the semi-final after we just destroyed the Irish scrum, and that was a kind of right, we're back on track. That was a blip, and it was really good.
They never change front and forwards wherever they are, do they? So it's their own little game, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just I want to go through a few more quick issues now. Another thing where I've fallen foul of the RFU for the 6,000th time is I don't agree that you should take sevens teams away. Six Nations has taken a lot of year-on-year effort to build up to where it is. England, when they won the World Cup, they all came back and they should have been available as a squad to play in the Six Nations. So all the people who were turned on to rugby by that should have seen their heroes, but they all went away and not very successfully. Kath, do they need to divide the squad up like this?
I my thoughts on this, Steve. I similar thoughts after, particularly after 2014, the gains we make, Team of the Year, Sports Personality of the Year, you know, win the World Cup, finally getting some really, really decent profile and, you know, people following us over and above yourself, Steve. And what a great opportunity for the game, what a great opportunity to get, you know, to market the game, to get sponsorship in, and the side is completely decimated, and actually I think it was one of the worst Six Nations results ever in that year. And I went to watch some of the games, and it was really tough. It was really tough watching that, and I was really, really angry. And there's just this huge focus on sevens, and then added to that with the contract gate and everything. I personally think it should be separate. I think it's a really tough ask on the players involved as well. You know, they are different sports, aren't they? 15 aside is this game for all shapes and all sizes. Sevens is a different game. Sevens has an evil amount of space on the pitch. Like, they're really, really different, but they're different games. And I think it's a really tough ask on the players that are involved, you know, the likes of Emily Scarrett. I think there should be different paths. I mean, there's not really a pathway for sevens. And I personally believe that 15s is the game that is our core game. You know, keep talking about this.
Well, yeah, for me, if you look at the men's game, those that play sevens, there's only one that I can name that's transitioned back, and that's Marcus Watson.
Yeah.
It is, as you say, two completely different games. So the problem that we had at the beginning was the player base, those who are good enough. You know, the amount of players that were good enough to play. And clearly, when you've got, you know, real speed merchants in the 15s, you want to put them out on the sevens. And because there's Olympic Games and gold medals at stake and all the rest of it, this is what the lure was. Now, I think the game, particularly with the Tyrrells, now 600 players have had access to decent strength and conditioning and decent medical support and good coaching. You've now got two separate squads that can cope. And yes, there are players in the sevens that I think should be in the 15s. There's no doubt in my mind. I think they're 15s players, not sevens players, that are out there at the moment. But that, through time, give it a couple more seasons, will balance out, and I think you'll get a completely separate sevens.
It needs to. With all due respect to our sevens, they're not doing that well. You know, they managed to get a bronze at Commonwealth, but they performed really badly for a number of years.
Wearing Rochelle's brushes, that when the World Cup was over, I felt really sorry for the people. All went off to paid rugby, whereas Sarah Hunter, Tamara, Rocky, and all the people who laid down the foundations didn't. I just thought that was wrong. But anyway, that's just me. I'm becoming grumpy in my old age, especially with half my face not working properly as well. Few quick ones. Next World Cup, you don't want to have a bad World Cup. You don't have a World Cup that doesn't work properly. Where should it be, Rocky?
Maybe America would be a good shout. But okay. I don't really know, to be honest.
You can't. You don't want it to go somewhere it dies a death in terms of publicity and commerce.
The biggest support system is still France. I know that's where we've just been. The French know how to do it and are absolutely passionate about the game. Obviously in England, I say no because I think we would do a fabulous job of it, but I still think it's about moving that around.
Okay.
I think Australia, they are really now starting to invest in it, and to me it would be a fabulous place to take it as well.
Okay.
So
I think it'd be a World Cup too early to go to Australia. I think we need like the TV ratings, the TV viewers, and I don't think we'd quite get that.
Be a nice holiday though for us.
Nice holiday. America, I think America's quite a good shot, but actually, I think it'll be England.
Now you come to think
of
it.
Bit of a suntan.
Nice. Another general point. Are you delighted that there's been a breakthrough of this magnitude, or are you thinking, for God's sake, how did it take so long?
I personally think it all started from the 2012 Olympics. Everyone got behind female sport, and it just escalated from there with the cricket, and then us and football and hockey, netball, all doing so well. And I think it's brilliant that we're starting to get the following, and you know, women are following women's sport a lot more as well, which is huge to actually increase ratings. Yeah, it's taken a bit of time, but I'm probably more of the glass is half full, and I'm, you know, proud that it's starting to move in the right direction. It's not quite there yet, but it certainly is on its way.
Kath?
Yeah, I think it's good because team sport generally is struggling against other, you know, sort of fitness and boot camp type things. So actually promoting and celebrating the increase, whether it's participation or profile in women's team sport, is great, isn't it? But it's part of this big movement that it's okay to be strong and okay to be a woman and play these sports. And actually, in terms of rugby and women's rugby, they're promoting the fact that it is a contact game. You know, we shouldn't go away from that. You know, that's partly what makes it great and being in that team environment. But yeah, I mean, it's pointless looking back saying, oh, you know, we didn't have this and we didn't have that, because it's irrelevant now. It is about moving forward. Future. As long as this momentum is kept, you know, keeps going and is pushed by the right people.
For me, it's about evolution. So when I was playing, I was considered a freak. I mean, it was right at the beginning of the whole thing, and it's like, you playing rugby? Well, there is that as well. But you know, and I was a PE teacher as well, and you know, it wasn't necessarily cool for girls to play sport. Now it's cool, and they've got role models, and they've got you see success. They can see the pathway. They can see what's there for them if they really want it, in terms of elite level. But there's also, you know, places for girls to go and play now and enjoy themselves, and it's cool to do so. And for me, we had to do all those things first. We had to be sweeping the change rooms ourselves and living in youth hostels and doing what we did and paying my hotel bill to win a World Cup. You know, that has to happen first. And so I'm actually looking at all this, I'm really proud of it, because I know that I've had a tiny little part in promoting that and in seeing now, you know, these little faces. So there were a lot of pictures after the Tyrrells of the girls with little ones, and the little ones are going, you're my idol, and that is just amazing. And you know, it's now an accessible pathway for a female that sport can be her life. I think that's just amazing.
I was at Reading Rugby Club the other day on Sunday morning, where my youngest coaches and the kids there, the youngsters, the girls, is just absolutely astonishing. The hundreds of them, the coach is completely overwhelmed. They know where to start.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I can ask you two questions now. Rochelle, there must have been some hard times there with trying to life balance and all the work you put in and the sacrifices you made. Any major regrets? Do you make any wrong calls?
Oh, God, deep question.
Thank you very much. I knew I'd think you went eventually.
Yeah, regrets maybe not listening to my body earlier and would have put me in better shape, I think, earlier on and listening to it. Biggest, best game, clearly the World Cup final, having been my third final, and actually winning it was just tremendous, and a moment I will never ever ever forget.
What do you want to do after you retire, whenever that may be, when we're not making you retire?
After I retired, I want to go on and coach as high level as I can. I still have the passion and enjoy match days as much as I do as a player, as a coach, or feel the lows as much as a player when you're coaching as well. So
Kath, I'm sorry, I'm going to put words in your mouth. I just got this thing that, having seen extracts from your book, that your one of your worst times was a bittersweet day when the girls won the World Cup in 2014. You were in the studio and you were clearly emotional. I asked you afterwards, and you were emotional for two reasons. A, because you were delighted they won, and B, because you looked back 4 years to the one that you didn't win.
Yeah, it was possibly one of the toughest days of my life. Retiring is really hard. It's what I always say, it's the toughest challenge of my England career. And hearing about Rocky, her decision, she'll cling on by her fingernails, Nolly's decision to retire on her terms. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to retire on my terms. And I was kind of dealing with that. And then to watch England women win the World Cup, and I'd missed out twice, and in 2006, 3 points in 2010. So I was in the studio, and I literally just started sobbing at the whistle for exactly those two reasons. So I guess regret for me, I have to accept that the decisions I made about retiring were right. I find it hard to not always question that decision. Did I do the right thing? And you know, when you see your team, oh, could I have carried on? Could I have been playing in there? So my regret, I suppose, is that I sometimes feel what if when I don't think I should. So that's pretty difficult. You can read more about it in the book.
Okay. But things in life in general are taking an upward turn.
Yeah, really good. You know, like, I've set up a company. I've done a huge amount of work with Tag Rugby Trust. We said have a female inspiration through rugby project in Zimbabwe, which is really, really going fantastically well. I'm really, really proud of that stuff that I've done in and around rugby, which would not have happened if it wasn't for my rugby career. Really enjoyed commentating, media work, and then setting up a brand new team again in Kent. Got married recently, and things are going really well in work and in life. And rugby will always be a part of my life, and it's how you balance it out in different ways through your life, and I'm loving that journey.
Giselle, you've got to go with regrets, first of all. Where did your career go wrong?
Where did it go wrong?
No, I don't mean that.
No,
where?
I know. Regret. I think, I suppose, again, that question, you think about it all over the place, but what you're just talking about, my last game for England, they didn't start me. Okay. So is it my regret? Is it? It wasn't to do with me. I didn't have that choice. No. They thought I would want to finish the game on the field. Well, they were wrong. So that's a regret, I would suggest. But in terms now, I suppose for the last 20 years, it's all been about coaching, and I don't see anything as regret. I learn and learn and learn, and I think the biggest thing for me now is that the quote from Rudyard Kipling around if, from the poem if you can treat triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. The reason for that is that I've had sometimes, so when Teddington won the Junior Vars at Twickenham, what a day that was, and that will etch in my head. But when we won the Senior, I didn't feel the same way. And I was like, well, this is better. This is the next level up. And it's the following year, and we've done this, and it's. But it didn't feel the same. Those games that I win, games that I lose, and I can now have a different perspective on it, and really holding on to that about treating the two. They are just the same. They're so close. Losing. So when you were talking about Quinn's coach wanting to run off a short pier, you've got to look at it in a different way, and I think that makes me a better coach, being able to cope with that. And as a youngster, I wasn't like that at all.
You're clearly very, very. I think anyone, the rest of us, can grasp that you're clearly really, really good at what you do. Have you got ambitions to be higher than WASP? Because although you wouldn't appoint a woman, as you say, to coach England, for instance, just because they're female, you would want to appoint the best person.
What a question. I feel I have a lot to offer. I feel that if I am the right person for the job at the right time, then I feel I could do a good job.
Okay.
I would welcome the opportunity, but I would have to be the right person at the right time for the right job. And, that's a big thing for me to say in that sense. I give what I'm doing at the time, and the project that I'm working on with WASS is amazing. The response of my athletes is phenomenal, and the general well-being around the club has changed so much in all levels of it. And I'm passionate about that project at the moment. I may be old, but I'm also young. So there is a lot of time ahead, and we'll wait and see what what comes along. And as I say, it's not about my gender, it's if I'm the best person for the job at that given moment.
Rochelle, I think we'll let you have the last word. The next England game, when's that?
That'll be in the autumn series.
Okay, and will you be ready for that?
If required, I will be chomping at the bit. If not, I'll be in the stand miserable. But, but I'll certainly be involved one way or another.
Okay. Thanks to everybody for downloading and listening to us today. Women's rugby has been a crazy series of ups and downs, but mostly ups. I remember Jill Burns is still my favourite rugby hero or heroine, and I did an interview with her so many years ago that... It's in the midst of time, but the boom in it has been fantastic, and we've got three people here in the studio today at the Ruck who have all had a massive part in that. So thank you to Rocky, thank you to Kath, thank you for Giselle, and we'll be back next week on Monday with Owen Slot and all that lot. We'll have them back and give them one more chance, but thanks ladies for everything.
Thank you.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.